Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. Okay, I have a very special treat tonight. I've got a very old friend of mine, Carol Pate, is the guest. And I've known each other for many, many years. We go way back, and I've been able to watch her career and the way it has been skyrocketing, and just she's making just leaps and bounds in her work. Now, Carol, I'm going to read a little bit from your website, and then I'll ask you to kind of fill in some. Okay, Carol Pate is a psychic, and in 1991, she was chosen the top female psychic in the United States by the Unicorn World Coordination and by the Tokyo Broadcast System in Japan. Now, Carol goes all over the world. You know, we're close friends, so she tells me a lot about her many adventures. She travels everywhere doing all kinds of investigations and working on many cases. But she has appeared in 3 international television documentaries and worked with all facets of the media, the local, state, and national levels, as well as all over the world. She's appeared as a guest expert on the Geraldo Rivera show, and also on The Other Side, Sightings, Unsolved Mysteries, Beyond Chance, most recently on MSNBC, Abraham's Report, and The Psychic Detectives, and Larry King Live. I didn't realize you'd been on Larry King. That must have been quite an experience.
That was quite an experience. It was really kind of neat.
Uh-huh, because is he as tough as he seems to be?
Well, actually, I was on with Nancy Grace.
Yeah.
Apparently, Larry King was in a plane somewhere.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't get to meet with him.
Uh-huh. Well, even on there, Nancy Grace seems kind of stern, too.
She was extremely nice.
Is she into these kind of things?
Well, I don't think so. I think it was because Psychic Detectives was coming out on Court TV.
Yeah.
And she was going over one of the cases that I had done for my first Psychic Detective show.
Uh-huh.
Which a boy hit was about a young man who disappeared in Malvern, Arkansas.
And so you think she was just kind of going along with it even though she didn't believe in it?
Well, she appeared to believe in it because, I mean, the police backed up everything. And
yeah.
And it was a resolved case. So she was actually praising me for my work.
Okay. Because I'm thinking those are kind of tough interviewers to go up against.
Yes, they can be.
You told me that you were just, when I talked to you last time, you were just going to film for your 6th episode of Psychic Detective.
Yes.
Did you do that?
Yes, I did that about 3 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
In Denton, Texas.
You said that's where the case took place, wasn't it?
That's correct. And it was a great case. I mean, it's not good. Murder is never good, okay?
Yeah.
But the case resolved really, really well. And it was on a murder case where the murderer had moved the victim's body 5 times.
Oh.
And we got a conviction on him.
Okay. Well, what was your part in that?
Well, basically, I had to tell them who had killed the young woman that was the victim, how she was killed, where she was killed, why she was killed, and where she was. And
where the body was located, you mean?
The body never got located.
It never did?
No, because he took her out of state.
Uh-huh.
On the 6th time, he took her out of state. And they would not go across the border or across the state line. But there was enough evidence gathered, plus I was able to tell them who was an eyewitness, where the witness was at that point in time. They flew out, and he was in another state, what his name was and the company that he worked for, and they brought him in, and he was able to testify. And this man got life. The murderer got life.
So he was convicted then?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, do you want to tell the audience how you get this information on the people? It seems like, you know exactly what they're thinking and where they are. Do you want to tell them how you pick up this information?
Well, basically, I have them send in a photograph to me or a sample of writing and ink. I then use what's known as psychometry. That means putting my hands on the photograph or the sample of writing and then refining and tuning my energy field into matching their signature energy field, which allows me to tune them in like you would a radio.
Uh-huh.
And then I feel in my body what the victim goes through. I hear their thoughts. I know their emotive and agenda. And if I can touch into the energy field of the murderer, I then can become one with his signature energy or hers and know their agenda and why they're doing what they're doing.
So you're able to do this by tuning in on the victim.
Yes, on the victim. Now, if the victim sees the perpetrator, I will see the perpetrator.
Oh, like looking through their eyes?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't see the perpetrator, then what I have to have is crime scenes where the victim and the perpetrator's energy are together.
You have to go to the actual scene.
No, I can actually use a photograph.
Oh, that way you can do it that way?
Mm-hmm.
Get the feelings off the pictures, too, then.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Of course, it's a little stronger to actually go to the crime scene itself, to be quite truthful with you.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes that's not always possible. And time constraint kind of feeds into that. Sometimes it's difficult for me to get away.
Yes, I noticed on your website it says you are consulted on at least 500 murder cases every year.
I was running 2 murder cases every day, 5 days a week.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was too much. It just got too much for me.
I think that would be. That would be draining, wouldn't it, on your own psychic?
It's terrible because I feel what they feel.
Uh-huh.
And it's extremely draining. It can be painful. It's extreme negative energy.
It'd be frustrating, too, wouldn't it?
Oh, sometimes incredibly frustrating.
Well, then you would be what I would call an empath, wouldn't you?
Yes.
But are you able to shake off those feelings afterwards?
Most of the time, yes. Sometimes, no. It depends on how traumatic, how painful the event was.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in one case I got hit by a train, and I think that's the worst feeling I've ever had. It took me hours to shake that off.
You mean while you were experiencing what the person was experiencing?
Yes.
They were hit by a train?
Yes.
No. And you actually felt all of that in your own body then?
Yes. It was horrific.
Hmm. It'd be like a shock.
Oh, it was a total body shock.
Because, you know, I work with a lot of healers, too, and they have to learn how to get rid of those the energy. Otherwise, they take on the symptoms of the person they work with.
Exactly.
And they become ill with it.
Yes, exactly.
You've learned how to release that after you work on a case?
Yes. On the most part, I can release it. It might stay with me for maybe a half an hour or an hour, but on the most part, I can release it.
Hmm. But 2 a day, that would be an awful workload.
Well, I've now cut it back to 1 a day. That's all I can do now is 1 a day.
You're still doing 1 a day anyway.
I'm still doing 1 a day.
And these are all over the United States or what?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Absolutely.
Well, are you consulted by the relatives or by the police?
Both.
Both of them.
I get a lot of police that are calling me up to work on cold cases, cases they haven't been able to resolve. And I've gotten a lot of families call me in to cases where they can't go any farther. The police are stuck.
Yes, we have a case right here in Huntsville like that. I don't know if you've ever called in on that.
I don't know.
It went through several court cases, and they still feel justice has not been done.
I'm not aware of that.
You know, we ended up with the father having a heart attack. He just couldn't take the strain of so many court cases and going on solid for so many years.
Oh.
You know, so sometimes the relatives do get to where they need somebody.
Well, sometimes, if nothing else, just to get some closure in their mind or some resolve. It's so frustrating when you just don't know anything. Mm-hmm. Or you have suspicions, and maybe it's not the right person, or maybe it is.
Yeah, that's with them. They have suspicions, but they've never been able to prove it.
Yeah.
So I guess that happens a lot, too, then.
Well, what I've learned is there are some cases that are not supposed to be solved.
Mm, maybe it's their karma or something?
Yes, exactly.
The parents' karma, I guess.
Well, everyone involved. Maybe the murderer has other people he has to murder.
Mm. Well, you know, we know how to think about this, even though a lot of people wouldn't, that everything happens for a reason, even if it's a negative one.
Absolutely.
And we can't help everyone. We can't prevent all these things.
No. No, we can't. And some of these cases that I get, they're not mine. I'm not supposed to solve them. And when that happens, I won't get very many details on them.
Uh-huh.
When it's my case, I'll be flooded with details.
All the emotions and the feelings of what went on.
Oh, every detail. I'll get, like, every detail, what they have on, what they're wearing, where they were just before. Every detail.
Mm.
And when they're not mine, I have to really fight through to get information.
Because it's not coming that clearly then.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And that's the frustrating one.
But you know how we're so used to watching TV where the police usually just laugh at psychics and don't want to work with them and think it doesn't, you know, there's nothing to it. It sounds like the ones you're working with do believe in it, the policemen, you know, and the agencies. Is that true?
I have had a lot of success in murder cases.
Yeah.
I have a good reputation, and they're usually skeptic when they come to me.
Yeah.
And then when I start giving them information, the skepticism goes away, and then they start listening to me.
Yeah, because you know how some of them are. They want to scoff at it.
And yeah, it's out there. I mean, you know.
Well, that shows that maybe they're opening up a lot more to it.
Oh, it's been wonderful.
Yeah, so that now they are the skeptical about it.
Exactly.
Do you have to, I'm thinking like the movies, you have to prove anything to them by picking up something about them, the policemen?
No, they usually don't want me to go into their heads at all.
I can see why. They definitely wouldn't like that.
Well, on the case that I did for Psychic Detective, the recent one, the police department sent me about 15 pictures. And they simply numbered them, and they asked me to tell them about each one of the individuals, were they connected in the murder, what part did they play, all the details about them, which I did on 15 different pictures.
Well, were these all involved, or were they just some other ones put in there just to throw you off track?
They were all, how can I put it, one was the murderer, one was a girlfriend, they were various people that actually were around the murderer.
Uh-huh.
Some were involved, some were not.
Okay, so I was thinking they might just put some others in there.
Usually that's what I ask them to do.
You know, as a double-blind study that way.
Yeah, but a lot of times they'll send me photographs of other police officers, and, you know, I know immediately, why are you sending me all these police officers? There's only one criminal here.
Yeah. You can weed those out right away then.
Oh, yeah, those are really simple. But when they send in kind of suspicious type people, that's a little more interesting.
Uh-huh. But, no, I didn't realize you were working on murder cases that much, you know, constantly like that. I think that would be a terrible drain on you.
I go into burnout every few months.
Uh-huh.
Where I just go flat. I can't do anything psychic.
Hmm.
Nothing. I don't even dare drive.
You're that burned out. You just want to go to bed?
Well, I can't feel anything. I can't reach out psychically. I just go into this burnout, and I'm better off just watching TV and vegging out.
Yeah.
So that's what I do.
But yeah, because otherwise that'd be a constant pressure. You know, that's what other psychics have told me, to be constantly picking up on the thoughts of everybody.
Oh, yeah.
It's too hard.
It's very difficult. It really is.
Some of them say they had to put shields up, because if they went out into the public, they were picking up on everyone's thoughts around them.
I don't go into the public very often. I do shield up when I go into the public.
So I was thinking you'd do the same way. You'd pick up on their thoughts, wouldn't you?
I can. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't want to listen to other people's thoughts.
But I mean, unless you have a way of turning it off, it's like a radio station that'll always be on.
I can shut down because I use psychometry.
Uh-huh.
So I shut down when I'm not using psychometry.
Uh-huh. And psychometry, the way I understand it, is handling objects too, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And getting information from that.
Absolutely.
But this is what you'd have to be, though, if the person was dead, that you were trying to work on that case.
Well, I work off the photograph of the individual.
Yeah.
And that leads me back to their signature energy. Because in truth, to me, there's no such thing as death.
Yeah, I believe that, too, in my work.
You know, I believe in life after death. So it's a matter of tuning in to them at that point in time.
Have you ever had it happen where the deceased has tried to contact you directly from the spirit side?
Yes.
That way you're not just working with inanimate things, you're actually working with their spirit?
Oh, yes, that has happened. I've had them leap into my body, so to speak.
Oh.
And take me over.
What was that like?
That was a little rough. Just a little rough. That happened, again, on this last case that I worked on that we did for Psychic Detective. The spirit of the girl leaped into my body at the place she got shot at.
Uh-huh.
And off we went with the police, with the detective. It was hard on me.
It's as though she was waiting there at that place for someone to come along or something.
You know what? I think so.
Just somebody to help with it, I guess.
Somebody to help
her. Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, then how do you get rid of them when something like that happens?
Well, I now know how to deal with that. For years, I did not know how to deal with it, so they kind of stayed with me.
Hmm, that's not good.
No, it wasn't good at all, especially when two of them had died from broken necks, and I had really serious neck problems from them.
Yeah, you'd pick up on the symptoms they died of.
Oh, you bet.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But I have learned that I work now with what I call the Band of Mercy, who are spirits of people who have been caught, are earthbound, and that who have gone into the light and now come and help others that are caught.
Yeah.
And I simply ask the Band of Mercy to remove any unclean spirits that are attached to me. Unclean meaning not cleansed by the light of God.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. They're still kind of earthbound?
Yeah, they're still earthbound. And take them into the light or into sanctuary in the name of Jesus Christ. And I'm completely cleared. It's automatic.
Yeah, because otherwise it goes into the theories of possession.
Oh, you bet. You bet. Yeah.
But that's what this work could be dangerous in that way. You don't want that to happen to you, you know.
Oh, it could be highly dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have another friend who's a psychic, and she said in the beginning she had learned how to shield it. Sometimes the person would come and wake her up in the middle of the night, be standing by the side of the bed.
Oh, my.
You know, and say, you've got to tell me. One of them was a 14-year-old boy, and he kept waking her up, and she kept saying, leave me alone, leave me alone. But he said, you've got to go and talk to my mother. You have to tell her this and this, and she didn't know the mother. So it was very disturbing. It was like, will you please leave me alone?
Yeah,
you had anything like that happen?
Yeah, I was actually driving with my husband. And we passed an overturned four-wheeler.
Uh-huh.
And the driver apparently had died, and he leaped into my body.
Ooh.
And just wanted to let his wife know what had happened to him. He was scared to death and frantic.
you were the first available vehicle, I
guess,
that he could pop into.
You bet. And I've had things like that occur my entire life.
But, you know, the other people, if it happened to them, they wouldn't even know what it was, but you could pick up on what it was.
Exactly. Well, I've made myself knowledgeable.
Yeah.
And most people are afraid to even make themselves knowledgeable. Because they're afraid if they have more knowledge, more things will happen.
Yeah, but you know, that's our brainwashing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Tell us something about your, you said this happened all your life.
Yeah.
Tell us something about your early life, when you first found out you could do these things, or what?
Well, when I was about 4 years old, we lived in California, in Alma Den, and it was very mountainous, pasture land. And I was roaming the pasture. I always roam pastures. And I went to this lady's house, and it was a big redwood house, and I asked the lady for a drink of water. Well, she said, if you'll go around to the side, there's a faucet over there, and you can get you a drink of water. And I went, okay. So I got a drink of water, and then I went back, and I thanked her, and I made note of her. She was a pretty woman.
Yeah.
And I went to my uncle's house. He lived on top of the hill. We lived halfway down. And my uncle and my father were there, and I was telling them about this really nice lady in this redwood house. And they both looked a little shocked, and my dad got really upset. And they said, that woman's dead. That house burned down 10 years ago.
Oh.
So that was kind of the kicker for me.
Yeah.
From there on, my first murder case that I ever worked, I was 12.
Wow. That did start young.
Yeah, it started way young. And I had a reputation in school for knowing things I shouldn't know.
Okay. You know how kids are. They can be very cruel.
Horrific. So the police came to see me, and they brought a photograph of my classmate and said that they had heard that he had a crush on me and that they thought he had come to see me, but they didn't know where he was. Well, I knew they were lying because we didn't actually like each other.
Yeah.
And I touched the photograph, and all of a sudden, I saw him being shot in the back by a young Hispanic boy because the boy accidentally fell with the gun in his hand.
So it wasn't deliberate then?
No, it was an accident.
Uh-huh.
And I told the police this, and I told them that he was in the pasture behind where he lived, but it was about a half a mile in the pasture. And so, sure enough, that's what happened.
Well, they believed you anyway.
Well, yeah, they apparently did because they found him, and they found the Hispanic boy, and the boy told him, and it matched with what I said, and it was all okay.
Uh-huh. Because sometimes they'll think, well, you know too much. Maybe you were involved.
I think they kind of thought that in the beginning. Yeah, I really do. And I've had cases where they've told me, we know that you did it because you couldn't know this much.
Yeah, uh-huh. So, you know, you get all sides of this. But you did start very young then.
Yeah, it was way young. It was just way young.
But the police did believe you. Did they ask you if do any more after that?
No.
Not in that town, in that area?
No, it kind of freaked them out, I think.
I think you would. That would have been quite a while ago.
And, you know, that was way back when, and there were no such things as psychics.
Yeah. It was all work of the devil or whatever.
Oh, yeah, you were a witch or whatever.
Oh, yeah, witch is a good one. They always like to say that.
Yeah, it was very difficult.
Uh-huh.
Then I worked with the FBI when I was 16, and I broke a 5-state drug and prostitution ring.
Oh, well, how did it happen they called you in on that?
Well, actually, there was a prostitute who begged me for help. She said, I don't know who you are, but I've got to have help. I need help. Please help me. And I went, okay.
You didn't know any different?
No. She wanted help. I helped her. So a friend of mine who went to school, his mother was an FBI agent, and so I told her this woman needed help, and then I told her all the information that I picked up by touching into this woman, and they were able to break the prostitution ring, and the woman got freed.
Hmm. So they didn't have any problem then letting you work on this?
No.
So But I'm thinking, you're 16, it's kind of young to ask you to come in on occasion.
You know what, you're right. I never really thought about it one way or the other.
Not in those cases. But you've been at it ever since then, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah, from there on, it just was all the time.
I didn't realize you were working so extensively now with all of these, you know, the murder cases. Because you do have your own psychic center. You get normal cases, too, don't you?
I love normal cases.
That's a relief, isn't it?
Yeah. I love it when somebody says, is this a guy I should marry or not marry? You know, you know, that's great.
Yeah, that, should I take this job or that job?
Yeah, that's wonderful. I love that. Or, you know, I'm in the midst of a divorce. What is my husband going to do? Or what is my wife going to do?
Yeah.
You know, or give me a nice embezzlement case. You know, that's pleasant. That'll work.
Yeah. But you don't like the heavy stuff all the time.
Yeah. Well, prior to psychic detectives, I was working about 200 cases a year, and that was fine.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was good. After psychic detectives, it just skyrocketed.
Yeah, I did happen to see you on one of those, and I think you did a very good job.
Well, thank you.
But now they're asking you to do more, and because of that publicity, you're having more cases then.
Exactly. That's
exactly. But tell us something about your center. It's the Carol Pate Psychic Center, and you can get in on this on the website, can't you?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Tell them about that. What do you do there?
My husband and I took a house that sits on an acre and a half and converted it to a psychic center where I have books and jewelry. I have great jewelry. All sorts of gifts, and I've got a hydrothermal table where, you know, if you're stressed out, you can lie on it, and it has jets, and it massages your back. I have a Betar where you can lie on it and get massaged with music. It's a table that has speakers in it. And I do my reading in one of the rooms there, my reading room. And it stays pretty busy. And
you have other people working for you, too, though, don't you?
Well, I have another lady that works with me, yes. But I don't have, like, a bunch of employees or anything.
But are there any? You don't have any other psychics working here, then?
No. No, I tried working with other psychics and bringing them in, and I found that it just didn't work. Ego problems.
Yeah, ego, definitely, and sometimes the energies just aren't compatible.
Uh-uh, and sometimes they just weren't what I hoped they would be.
Mm-hmm. Oh, a lot of times, I know in my work, too, and in my publishing company, we're running into a lot of greed.
Oh, yeah.
Greed and ego keep seeping in.
Oh, yeah.
And so, no, you can't work with that kind of energies anyway.
No. Well, a lot of the psychics that are out there, and I'm finding out there aren't many psychics out there that work in my field. From what I understand, there's not but about 11 of us.
Mm.
There's a lot of would-be psychics.
Oh, there's always one of these.
Oh, yeah, and all of those.
I run into them a lot at the lectures and conferences I go to.
Yeah.
Always the ones that want to be in this, and they don't have any abilities.
Yeah, I get a lot of those. I'm getting people that call me up telling me, all of a sudden I woke up and realized that I was a psychic detective. Now, how do I do this?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going, okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of them are fakes, too, but that's in all of this, you know, kind of metaphysical work. We always run into those that are the fakes, and then there's the wannabes, and a lot of them have to make up things because they're expected to be psychic all the time.
I don't understand that.
It backfires on them.
Well, I would think so, yeah. I mean,
but I think there's something about the glamour, they think, and they want to be doing this kind of work, so they have to put on some kind of a front.
Well, would you please tell me where the glamour is? I haven't found it.
That's what I was going to say. It doesn't sound like your life is very glamorous.
I don't think
with
so.
With this part, I know you travel a lot, but I mean, if you have to work on murder cases during the day where you take on the energy of the deceased. None of this sounds to me like it'd be very glamorous.
I'll tell you the truth. I've never seen a true, real psychic that wanted to be a psychic.
They really wanted to be normal?
Yes.
Whatever normal is?
Whatever that is. They didn't. It's very, very difficult. You don't live normal. You just don't. It's very hard on the body. It's hard on the mind, emotions. And I'm very well grounded in spirituality and in God, and that's what's kept me truly afloat.
But these other ones wouldn't be. They just want to think this will be exciting, and they want to get into it.
Well, I suppose it can be exciting, yeah.
But, you know, that's what they're going into it for, instead of trying to help people.
Well, I think what they want is being special. Here I'm trying to be normal, and they're trying to be special.
Yeah, that happens a lot in my work, too.
Yeah, it's
you know, people
strange.
Want to do what I do. They say, oh, it'd be so exciting. You know, you get to write and travel all over the world. But you don't realize after a while, you do get tired of it. It is burnout. And,
yeah.
You know, it's not as exciting as people think.
Well, it is if they don't know about it, if they've never experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds good. It's like being a movie star in their way of thinking.
That's what they think, you know. But after a while, I found that every airport, every hotel, and every convention center just all looks alike. It's just a different city.
Exactly. And for me, it's a different energy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm getting to where I don't even want to be around the energies in those big cities anymore.
Oh, I know. Isn't it awful?
Maybe I'm becoming more sensitive to it. But,
well,
you know,
Lord,
things are changing.
You've always been sensitive.
Well, you know, but I mean, they're talking about the vibrations and frequencies are changing, and maybe something like that is happening because I seem to be becoming more sensitive on these big city energies.
Well, I'll tell you, the energies are growing. They're heightening.
Yeah.
We're getting ready to go into a very dangerous time.
Uh-huh.
Weather-wise, it's going to be really, really dangerous.
I've been hearing that from other people, too, and even in my sessions I'm having. They said March is supposed to be particularly bad.
Oh, yeah.
You're picking up on that, too?
Yeah. I'm getting a lot dealing with hurricanes, some of them being supercell hurricanes, earthquakes, volcanoes. Tsunamis, straight line winds.
All through 2006?
Oh, I think it's going to run about 12 years.
12 years? Because I was thinking March is usually not the hurricane season, but I've been getting, you know, during my sessions, you know, they come through and, you know who I mean by they,
yes,
and I think
yes.
The listeners probably know in a way, they come through and they'll say that, this is going, starting this year, it's going to be a lot more weather phenomena and also man-made disasters, too, they said.
Yeah, I'm particularly worried about the year 2007 with the Al-Qaeda.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't had any worry or concern about them at all striking the U.S.
But that's what I've been hearing, too, that there's going to be a lot, big increase in the natural disasters because Mother Earth is beginning to protest.
Well, Mother Earth needs to do a little cleaning.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what
like
they said. You know, you
notice
it has a lot to do with water.
Oh, yeah, water, yes.
That is a cleansing process, but the
yes.
tsunamis and the hurricanes and everything that happens seems to do with water.
Yes.
And it's getting worse, too.
It is, but it's not the end of the world.
No, that's what I tell people. Even in my books, they said it's the end of the world as you know it.
Can be.
It's going to be a lot of changes, and we have to learn to adapt to it. But we can do it. It's just that the average person out there is going to have a harder time, I think, changing and adapting to these things.
People don't like change, Dolores.
Well, yeah, that's true. They want their life to go on the way it has always been.
People like to ritualize. And when change comes into place, it throws them completely askew.
You mean they just like their routine?
Yeah.
the same old thing. They get up in the morning and do the same thing, so they don't want that disrupted.
Correct. And everything about this earth plane has changed. That's what we have to look forward to, is constant change.
Well, for things not to change, it becomes stagnant.
Exactly. No growth.
Yeah, you have to grow, and that's what I've been telling people on my other shows here, is that we have, if you're here to learn lessons, and it's a school, and some of these lessons are not very, you know, they're not very good, but we chose to come in at this time to experience all these things.
Well, I'm told that we chose our mother and father.
Yeah.
We chose the families.
Uh-huh.
And that we chose the experiences.
It's all for growth.
It's all for growth.
And some people have to take the clover and over again because they don't learn it the first time around.
Absolutely.
They have to keep going back again and again, and finally, then they can learn that they can go on to the next lesson, which may or may not be better. We never know.
Well, I've never seen a lesson come the easy way. It's always the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, we will not budge.
You just stay where you are.
We like our negative comfort zone.
Yeah, and you won't grow.
No.
I do remember when I was in grade school, one teacher told me, I said, that's not easy. And she said, if it was easy, what did she say? If it was easy, you wouldn't learn anything. And that was way back then.
Oh,
so
okay.
If it was easy, you're not learning anything. You have to be growing.
Well, the nice thing about it is when you do make those steps of growth, you get perks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you it's like the spirit community goes, yay, you did it.
Yeah.
Now here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worthwhile on multiple levels. And right now, humanity needs to learn that we need to respect this planet and take care of this planet and take care of each other.
Yeah, and that's your kind of go the other direction, that's the thing. But then when I'm doing my lectures, you know, on Between Death and Life, and I talk about this being a school and everything, I said everyone has had bad things happen to them. That's life. That's part of living. But when you look at it, did you learn even one thing? What did you learn from that bad experience?
Exactly.
They're usually sitting around, well, poor me type thing, you know. And, you know, they can be quite horrific experiences. But if you look at it, did you learn even one thing? That was the purpose of it. It was worth it.
Well, if we don't come out of the emotion of it, we can't learn anything from it. We have to step outside of the emotion and look at what was really happening and why. Why did this happen to me?
Objectively.
Uh-huh.
That's hard. You have to go quite a ways before they can get to that point.
Well, that's what I'm there for.
Yeah, to help them release some of this information.
They'll come to me in an emotional state of everything falling apart around them.
Yeah.
And then I can objectively tell them why this is happening to them and why this person is this way and why this person does this, and get them to start taking some of their own personal responsibility.
Yeah, you have to always tell them, take your power back.
Absolutely.
You give your power away too easily to other people.
We personalize everyone.
Yeah. No, I have clients that come to me all the time. Not as many as you. I'm glad I'm not on that kind of a schedule. But I have them come to me, too, and they have all these problems. And, you know, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, my gosh, is that all you got to worry about? But to them, it's very important and very personal. And you have to work on it with that level. You know, help them wherever they are anyway.
Absolutely.
And it's not always easy.
Well, they need someone that is not involved.
Yeah.
That can look at it objectively and lay it out for them.
Yeah. A lot of mine, it's just talking is one important thing anyway. Just to be able to have someone to talk to.
Well, that's, yeah. A lot of people don't have anyone to talk to.
No.
or anyone that they can trust.
I can't solve their problems. I don't think you can either.
I can't solve anybody's problems. I can give them answers and information, but then they have to solve their own problem.
Yeah, but that's just what, a lot of times they come expecting you to take it over and sign or, you know, solve everything.
Well, we've been McDonaldized.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, we expect the answer and the solution right then, right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like fast food. Take care of it right now.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work that way. We have to shoulder responsibility for ourselves and what we've gotten ourselves into.
Yeah. And when they come to us wanting us to solve their problems, actually they're giving their power away because they're wanting somebody else to take it. You know, and they don't want to have the responsibility of trying to deal with it themselves.
Well, I think most people are like that. That's why we have leaders and we have followers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't we all just like to put the responsibility on somebody else?
Yeah, take this away from me. I don't want to deal with it.
Exactly.
But in my work, I found out it just gets worse if they don't deal with it.
Sure it does.
The next lesson will be a little harder, a little more difficult.
Yeah, you get a 2x4 and then it gets a little bit bigger and thicker.
That's what I tell them. If you don't pay attention, you're going to get hit up the side of the head.
Yeah.
That's what you mean by the 2x4.
Exactly. But sometimes, Dolores, they can't hear it.
What?
They can't hear the information.
Yeah.
Because it's not what they want to hear.
Even if they do hear it, they don't want to hear it.
No. Because it means they have to do something. Or it's not the way they thought it was.
Mm.
Or maybe it damages their ego a little bit.
They have to think, too.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't want to think.
Boy, that's true.
But Carol, I was just thinking about, let's tell them about your work with the Sphinx. I think that's fascinating.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you've gone back over there recently, but you know, you told me that you went down underneath the Sphinx into the hidden tunnels.
Not quite.
But you were lower down in there.
I was brought in on the Shore Foundation. They were doing a trip to Egypt that was also sponsored by ARE.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Edgar Casey Foundation. Mm-hmm. And I was there, and there was a couple of other psychics and astrologers and different folks that were involved. And I had free run of the plateau. I mean, if I wanted to go anywhere, they unlocked it, and I went there.
Oh.
Which was really kind of neat.
Yeah, different than the tourists.
Oh, way different. You know, I spent 3 hours in the King's Chamber. I spent a half an hour in the Queen's Chamber, which you do not get to go into. And the various pyramids. But I found a tunnel that led from the pyramid down to the tail of the Sphinx. It was underground about 300 feet.
It went from the pyramid over to it?
Yes.
You know, my work, I've heard they have those tunnels, but I didn't know if they'd ever been discovered.
Yes.
So
yes.
Do the people there, the authorities, know those tunnels are there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when we discovered it. See, originally it was on the, the Grand, I can't think of what you call it. Going from the pyramids to the Sphinx, there was a well that was right there that had been filled with water forever, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Well, all of a sudden the well dried up. And so Boris Said, he was the producer for Mysteries of the Sphinx, and he was working on this particular project. He was filming it.
Yeah, I've heard of him. He's an authority over there.
Oh, yeah. He's great. And so I told Boris, I said, Boris, at the bottom of that well, there is a tunnel that leads from the pyramid to the tail of the Sphinx. Well, sure enough, the water dries up. Boris goes down there, and their first level contains sarcophaguses. Okay?
Yeah, these had never been seen before.
Never been seen before.
Yeah.
Then there is another level, And then there is a lower level which had the appearance of an underground temple.
How did it appear, the temple?
It had four columns in the center.
Uh-huh.
And it was a square, okay? And on the columns there were notches, and it's the same notches that I had seen in the Great Pyramid.
She'll be back in a few minutes.
And I noticed that there was still water there, okay?
Yeah.
And the center of the square was filled with water.
You see, Carol, did you close the door there or something?
It's not me.
Okay, I was thinking for whoever it is in the other room, if they you can close
not
the
mine.
Door so we won't hear them.
That's not me. We've got somebody else there.
Oh, well, they usually aren't online with us.
I know. It's weird, isn't it?
Oh, I have weird things happen anyway. Okay.
I don't know who that is.
No, it's not on my end. I thought it was on yours.
I thought it was on yours.
I thought maybe it was James in the other room.
No.
Well, I don't know. They usually close their line off. I'm sorry. Well, it wouldn't be unusual for me to have strange things happening anyway if you're
Whoa.
On the air. Okay, but these notches, you found those in the pyramids also?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Let's go back to that part.
I noticed notches going to the king's chamber.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anyone ever paid attention to them or not. Another thing that I noticed was the stairway leading to the king's chamber is worn away. Yeah, it's made out of stone, granite. And the stairway is worn away. Now, how did the stairway get worn away?
There'd have to be a lot of people walking up and down.
There sure would.
Yeah.
But that isn't the case.
It's not.
No. It was that way when they opened it.
Oh. Well, unless in the olden times, you mean way back when it was built, do you think there was a lot of people going up and down?
I do. Yes.
So something would have had to have worn it down.
People. You see, I fully believe that the pyramids were places of initiation.
Yes, I believe that because, you know, in my hypnosis cases, we have people that lived in those times.
Uh-huh.
And they were used for a lot. They weren't tombs. They were used for a lot of other things.
They were like temples.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And there were a lot of ceremonies that took place.
That's correct. And if you look at the stairway, you will see that it's been worn away by feet.
That would mean like maybe... Oh, whole groups of maybe secret schools or something.
Exactly.
With the people going up and down.
Exactly.
What about the Queen's Chamber? Were those the same way?
It's straight through. There's no stairs.
Oh, it just goes straight through.
Uh-huh.
But we'll go back to the Sphinx in a minute, but you said you were sitting in there for 3 hours. What did you pick up when you sat there that long?
It was very interesting. J.J. Hertek, I don't know if you know about him.
Yeah, I know him.
Okay, J.J. Hertek was there, and he had some singers that came in, and they played, and they sang all the names of God.
Uh-huh.
And this went on for like 3 hours.
Mm.
And Boris said, we all sat around in the King's Chamber, and Boris said that I sat in... various positions that a yoga would sit in.
Yeah.
Master positions that I have no memory of.
Hmm.
I just don't have any memory of it.
Do you normally do yoga?
I don't do yoga at all.
So you wouldn't know those positions.
No. I mean, that's what they told me.
Yeah.
I have no memory.
Hmm.
But I knew that I kind of, in my mind, I was just sort of floating.
Yeah.
While this was going on, and I was lost in the names of God being sung, and it was like it had only been going on for a few minutes.
Mm. So you weren't picking up any information from the King's Chamber. You were just like in an altered state.
I was in an altered state. Now, I did pick up a lot of information while I was there. I picked up some information that I gave to Dr. Shore, that he said was verified by a papyrus that's kept secret and it's all written in red, which I thought was interesting. That's what got me to Egypt when I told him that information.
Oh, then he realized you knew something that the average person wouldn't know.
That's right. Otherwise, I wasn't going. He wasn't really interested in me going. Forrest wanted me to go.
But let's go back to the Sphinx then, because I know you told me, oh, you said you did go in there and you found the sarcophagus, and didn't you find skeletons and things?
Well, when we went to the very bottom of this well, that's where this apparent temple was located.
Yeah.
And there was a black sarcophagus lid that was over in the corner, lying flat.
Yeah.
And it was, it had no lip to it, which was kind of interesting. And there were skeletons everywhere.
Down in the bottom of the well?
Uh-huh. Human remains everywhere. So everyone was like really shook up because there was human bodies, there were skeletons all around.
Didn't you say the ones that went with you, the ones that got shook up?
Yeah.
So the Egyptians, the men.
Yeah, well, everyone was, you know, they were just like shook up. So I picked up one of the thigh bones and tuned into it. And I saw that there had been a battle between the priests, the high priests, and warriors, that they were shutting down, the priests were shutting down the Sphinx, the chambers under the Sphinx, and the Great Pyramids. They were all being shut down.
Could you pick up on why?
Yes, there was a takeover by the people. The people wanted to no longer abide by the priests.
And they had a lot of power in those days.
They had awesome power.
Uh-huh.
And so there was a total takeover. And the priests were murdered, but not before they sealed the entry to the tunnel that led from the pyramid to the base of the Sphinx.
Uh-huh.
And the government refused to lift that sarcophagus lid while we were there, which really kind of ticked Boris off and upset Dr. Shore, because there, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt, there was a tunnel under there.
Uh-huh.
Later, they did lift it up and they did find the tunnel, but the tunnel was filled with water.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that.
Uh-huh.
You couldn't go down any further then.
Couldn't go down any further. Now, there is an antechamber right under the base of the Sphinx, at the tail of the Sphinx, which is only 12 feet down. And they had dug a tunnel. The Egyptians had done it, dug a tunnel to that entry, but there was a big wall there of solid granite.
Uh-huh.
And they couldn't get through it. They didn't know how to get through it. And they were afraid to get through it because they were afraid it would unstabilize the whole plateau.
Oh, the whole plateau?
Underneath the Sphinx.
Wow.
See, the Sphinx is created by a single block of limestone.
Yeah.
And its flooring is also that single block of limestone. And the wall around it is also that single block of limestone.
But it has an inner, it's riddled underneath with tunnels, though.
It has nine chambers altogether, eight chambers, and they're stair-stepped because they did sounding. Mr. Debecki did soundings and found that these chambers were at various levels underneath the Sphinx.
Uh-huh.
And there's a huge chamber under the right paw of the Sphinx, which is about 900 feet long. And he found that it was filled with objects.
Objects.
Some kind of objects. Don't know what they are. We can suspicion what they are, but we don't know what they are. But apparently some of them are of metal. Some of them are various things because they give off certain soundings.
Oh, okay.
But we were not allowed to go any farther with it.
You know, Carol, that's the problem. I'm watching the clock.
I'm sorry.
And I'm going to have to stop, but the because they always want us to stop 5 minutes before the hour, but we're just getting into something very fascinating here.
Oh, it was awesome. At some point, I'll tell you the information that I
got.
That's
what I'm wondering. If we did another show, would you fill us in some more on these things?
Sure.
Because, and I think we have just touched the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, yeah.
All right, I think we're going to have to stop now, and maybe we can continue this, and if we do, we'll start in on this same type of information.
Okay, that's
I've known you so long, I know you have tons of information.
Oh, yes.
And you're getting ready to go to Bali.
Yep, getting ready to do that.
Okay, so I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I know they're going to pull the plug in a few minutes.
I understand.
Okay, well, let's sign off for now, then. Oh, give out your website number, what they can people can click in on.
Dolores, can you do that?
All right, I'll do that, then.
I'm no good. I blow up computers and just do
I mean, to tell them so they can click in on it if they want to find out more about you.
I think it's CarolPatePsychicCenter.com.
It's all in one word.
All in one word.
CarolPatePsychicCenter.com.
Uh-huh.
You have a number if they want to call you, or do you want any more calls?
Well, yeah, it's okay. They won't be able to reach me. They'll have to call Carol, who works with me.
Yeah, they'll get you. We have to be shielded. You have to. There's no other way you can do it.
I can't do it any other way.
Uh-huh.
It's area code 501-888-8056.
You repeat that?
Area code 501-888-8056.
Okay. And I want to thank you for coming on, and I know we'll have you on again.
Well, Dolores, thank you so much for this interview. I've enjoyed it. Of course, I always enjoy talking to you.
Okay. All right. Well, then we're signing off right now, then, and until next week.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.